This is Totally Heroes. This is our theme song. Yeah, we're Totally Heroes. Well, you've got Dave, and he's the host. We're sorry about that. But hey, there's always Shank, and he's kind of cool. He's like a really techie guy. And then there's Brian. Well, he is the Jason Statham of Lord of the Rings Online. Really doesn't make any sense. But we talk about video games on Totally, Totally Heroes. Well, this song really stinks, but the show is awesome. Listen to Totally, Totally Heroes by QGN. That stands for Quest Gaming Network. Yeah, Totally, Totally Heroes. Gonna start right now. We promise it's better than this theme song. Take it away, Dave. Take it away, Shank. Brian, join in too. Totally Heroes, going live right now.
Hello, and welcome to Totally Heroes, the QGN Roundtable discussion where we pick apart the game industry at large. My name is Dave D'Enforce Adams, and with me tonight is Brian Silent Fury 007.
What's up, guys? How's it going tonight? Good to be here.
How are you doing, Brian?
I'm fantastic.
It's good to have you, as always. Not so much good to have is Shank! Tank!
Guess who I am, you guys. So, okay. Literally at the nth hour, we've had a change in something that we're going to add to this show as far as the discussion topic. But it's going to be interesting. We're going to talk about a certain pre-order, or pre-orders, I should say, for a certain game. And if one of you guys can give me the link to that, that'd be awesome for the lovely chat room.
I got it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And secondly, Brian has some pretty interesting discussion on some video game charts, top tens, and he also did some math, which is terrifying. finally, we have some Halo 5 news that may have come out last week, as well as our Hero Play. And we actually had something interesting. I had somebody on Twitter ask me a question specifically for Totally Heroes. So I'm going to give this person a shout out, and we're going to be discussing that during the show. But first things first, guys. Last week we got a little bit carried away at the beginning.
Yes, we did.
Okay, we got a little bit carried away at the beginning.
A little bit more than carried away.
Yeah, a little bit. But this week, hey Brian.
What's up, Shank?
Would you like turntables?
That's worse than last week's.
Well, yes, I love turntables. Unfortunately, I don't know where to go with that. So instead of trying to figure out what you're talking about, I'm just going to flip over to audibletrial.com/questgamingnetwork and find myself a free audiobook. That way I don't have to listen to Shank try to throw these amazing segues at me and figure out what to do with them. So head on over there with me, why don't you? audibletrial.com/questgamingnetwork, where you can get a free 30-day trial. You can check out a book. You can get a free book. You don't have to read it. You just sit there and listen to it and tune Shank out. You can check out some great stuff. We've had all kinds of great books on here that you can listen to. If you're in school, go find your textbooks on there. There's a bunch of them on there. If you like Elder Scrolls, check out The Infernal City. It's an Elder Scrolls novel. And if you hear slight mysterious laughing in the background, you're not just crazy. That is actually Shank. But you can go find a book in case you do have voices in your head. There's a great book called I Have Voices in My Head by John Is Hearing Things. I don't know. That's probably not a book, but there's probably something like that on audibletrial.com/questgamingnetwork. So go check it out. Great stuff. I'm a member. It's awesome. Now back to you, Dave.
I don't want to do this anymore. You know what we need to do? We need to feed the need for speed.
For speed!
God, I hate you people. All right, let's go ahead. Let's get right in into the news for the week. We actually have, like, some really big stuff to talk about this week. I kind of want to start slow first, because I know we're going to get into a few rants. So I'm going to do it backwards. I'm going to do it Shank, Brian, then what I brought for this week, because what I brought, I know, is going to make people, like, angry. So Shank...
Meaning, what I brought this week is going to make Shank angry.
It's going to make Shank angry, that's but everybody else is going to be like, wow, that's neat.
All right. Well, what I brought to the table this week, actually, it's something that I so nihilistically wrote up and figured I'd self-plug. But it's okay, because it's pretty big news. I am a self-professed Halo fan, not of the spin-offs with, you know, ODST and Reach. Reach was just don't even talk to me about Reach. But the numbered Halo games I really like. I play them. I love the story in these, and especially, you know, Halo 4. Didn't think it could get better than Halo 2, and it did. It was the best Halo I've played. It was just unbelievably good story, and they pushed the Xbox really, really hard. And if you remember from E3 last year, there was they said, you know, just Halo, boom, Halo, with Master Chief sort of just wandering a desert with some ancient giant, like, Forerunner thing that just erupted from the desert. Well, we were told on May 16th that Bonnie Ross, who was the GM, general manager at 343 Industries, posted an announcement on Xbox Wire about the new Halo game, and it's going to be called Halo 5 Guardians. And this is the next chapter in Master Chief's epic journey. When is this going to release? Well, fall 2015, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be November. Pretty much every single Halo game's been released in November. So, yep, you can look forward to a November release for this. Few things that I wanted to point out here, which were I thought were interesting from the Xbox Wire piece. The game is being targeted to run at 60 frames per second and on dedicated servers. And from the article, it says, quote, "In the past Halo games, we have pushed the Xbox forward, showcasing the console and its ecosystem in entertaining and innovative ways. Making a Halo game that runs at 60 frames per second on dedicated servers, with the scope, features, and scale we've been dreaming of for more than a decade, is non-trivial. It's a task that we at 343 Industries are taking very seriously to ensure we deliver the Halo game that fans deserve, and a game that is built from the ground up for Xbox One." And Ross continues that, you know, that the scope of this game is just so far and beyond, you know, anything that has been attempted in past Halo games. And it's also going to be running on a new engine. Quote, "Halo 5 Guardians is a bigger effort than Halo 4. That applies to the content and scope of the game, as well as the technology in what's now a brand new and more powerful engine. Certainly, there are some core elements carried over from prior games, but we've invested a huge effort in retooling our tech to take full advantage of the Xbox One's hardware and ecosystem to create worlds and experiences worthy of next gen." So clearly, I mean, the release goes on to say that they've learned a lot from Halo 4. That was their first Halo title, and in my opinion, they knocked it out of the park. It was just an amazing Halo experience. And you know, she mentions incorporating things we learned about Halo 4, about technology, aesthetics, performance, and scale, and perhaps more importantly, understanding and embracing a community of gamers who love what lies ahead, love what lies at the heart of this game and the limitless potential of the Halo series. So, of course, there's going to be they're going to be discussing this at E3 this year, and as they say as much. And if you remember, last year E3, they mentioned a journey of Halo, you know, rather than a destination. And she says, quote, "That journey definitely begins in 2014 with a giant leap," and this is in bold. This is in bold in the Xbox Wire release. "Rather than one small step, we'll give you much more information about our plans for this year at E3 media briefing on June 9th, and we're confident that Halo fans will be pretty excited about the special plans we have in store." So, you know, this is pretty interesting. And since then, we've heard rumblings that there's going to be a Master Chief sort of package.
Yeah, the remakes of 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, and if that's the case, I will probably be getting it, because I mean... like I said, the numbered Halo games I really love. I thought Halo 3 was by far the weakest one for Master Chief titles. But, you know, if they're built up, ground up for the Xbox One, I'll play again. Why not? But here's what I thought was interesting about this. If we look at the release, she says targeted to run on 60 frames per second and dedicated servers. But there's absolutely zero mention of resolution here. Now, okay, you all know me and how much I just really despise 60 frames per second at the cost of everything else. So this makes me a little bit worried. There's no mention of resolution. And
I don't know why you're worried. It's obvious when someone touts 60 frames per second, that's the key word for we're making it for the people who want a PvP.
Right. But...
So I have no faith in this game immediately.
Right. But here's the other thing you got to keep in mind. What was announced earlier this year by Microsoft? DirectX 12. We already know that, and in various interviews, that the current Xbox API, the drivers for that, are just really just garbage. They really are. DirectX 12 is a much, much lower level API than DirectX 11, which is currently on the Xbox One. What this means to me is that if it was that DirectX 12 was announced this year, fall 2015, guess what? That's going to be 18 months from when the DirectX 12 API was announced. Halo 5 could be, in theory, one of the first DirectX 12 titles available on the market, you know, regardless of PC or console. If that's the case, and DirectX 12 is as optimized as they say, which I firmly believe it is going to be, this game, with the optimizations they find, and with drivers that are not utter crap, like the current API... they can push past those boundaries by just reducing the already, you know, the overhead that's in the current drivers. Maybe this can be a 1080p title. So there's my worry and my spark of hope with DirectX 12. And I don't think that's a far of a leap, honestly, because I'm pretty sure that we're going to start seeing DX 12 games next fall anyway.
I would hope so.
This might be one of the... I mean, this could be a perfect candidate. Think about it. This is, Halo is the flagship for Xbox. What is a better way to wave that DirectX 12 banner than have your flagship franchise be one of the first titles? You know? I think this could be a distinct possibility.
Yeah, it would.
So that's my little two cents on it. I'm excited for this game. I love the story in the Halo series.
I have a trivial question for you here. What's the significance behind Halo 5 Guardians? Because hasn't every other game in the series just been Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo 4? Why the Guardians now?
So, okay, if you haven't played Halo 4, just go play it. It's 2 years old. Well, it's a year and a half old at this point. I'm not spoiling anything. So, Cortana basically dies at the end of Halo 4. And there's like this huge story and build up as to, you know, why she went, you know, it's called rampancy. Her AI just literally went insane and thought herself to death. So in Guardians, there's always something in the multiplayer of the Halo games. If you stray too far outside of the map boundaries, like turrets or something will kill you. And every time you get shot by one of those automatic turrets, it said, you know, so-and-so, Silent Fury was killed by the Guardians.
So
the Guardians have always been like, and trust me, like everybody's always wondered what these, you know, who are these Guardians that keep killing me? This might be an explanation to what exactly those Guardians are. That's my theory. That's what I think that's going to happen. But yeah, I don't know why they would give a subtitle to this. It's interesting. I think it's, if anything, I think it just makes it more significant.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm excited to see what happens. I haven't played a whole lot of Halo, but I know people love them, and they're always fun. So I'll be excited to see how this shakes out.
I first played Halo and was very, very confused because it came out, and my first thought was, is this Xbox's version of Cooking Mama? Then I found out it was Chief and not Chef. Master Chief. And I was like, oh, okay. But in all honesty... I didn't know Halo 4 even released.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's if you've played the other past Halo titles,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, Halo 4 is by far the best. It's the one with the richest story. It's a very, very emotional story. The writing is good. I have never seen the Xbox 360 pushed as it has in that game. I saw some very things that I was sincerely impressed with in that game. So both technically for the 360 and just from a, you know, writing standpoint, I thought it was the best Halo.
Well, I'm just now learning of its existence.
Oh, there you go.
So there's that. I thought this was Halo 4 that everyone was talking about.
Oh, no, no.
It actually is Halo 5. I was like, yep. Oh, neat. It just, I feel that at this point with the way the market is, I get it. The Xbox One is underpowered. Congratulations. Gold star for anyone who knew that. Enough of talking about it. The point is at this day and age, they can make games that are 60 frames per second, 1080p on the Xbox. The fact of the matter is they're spending resources elsewhere within the games to do other stuff. Yes, the other stuff is what makes it pretty, but the fact of the matter is this system can run 60 frames per second and 1080p. My question is, why is it even advertised? Why isn't this the standard to the point where it even is
set? I'll tell you why. I will tell you why. Because what happened in 2012 in the industry? Huge PC resurgence. Huge PC. I don't even think that's really, you can really disprove that either. I mean, no. 2012 was
Steam was huge.
Steam was huge. We had tons of PC exclusives.
Yeah.
And
well, because the programmers were surpassing the old outdated consoles that were on the market. So of course the consoles were on the market way too long, growing cobwebs on them because they were so underpowered from where the games could be. But
see, here's why, but this is the reason why 60 frames and 1080p has become this buzzword. For not for the PC, I'm talking specifically in the consoles, especially with these new consoles. Consumers, since the last generation launched, just your general gaming consumer has gotten more savvy. So if you told somebody in 2006, dude, this is 1080p, I guarantee he'd be like, okay. But if you tell them now, he'll more or less understand what 1080p is. You know, he might not understand what the P stands for, but he understands what 1080p is. He understands what 60 frames per second means. The thing is, and this, the way, how does the 2012 tie into this 1080p 60 debate for the consoles? Well, PC saw a huge resurgence. How many people, how many videos, how many games came out that year that you saw on YouTube and everything saying this is totally fully maxed out, full ultra, running at 1080p resolution at 60 frames per second on my PC? Hell, Battlefield 3 in 2011, what was all the marketing footage they showed? It was the PC version, which was gorgeous. Battlefield 4, what was the version they showed? PC version, which looked gorgeous. I think it is just a subconscious thing now in the industry, specifically for console gaming, too, because, you know, that's something that I think was observed as a PC premium for so long that, okay, new console tech must imply, and this is a gross generality, but this is the feeling that I'm getting just from looking at everything in the industry is, okay, new console tech, okay, cool. That means it's as powerful as a PC, right? Well, PC can do 1080p 60. That's awesome. Well, okay, cool. We should expect things at 1080p resolution at 60 frames per second. Even though that is a little bit misguided, because the PCs, you take a high-end PC of today to a high-end PC to one of the consoles, there really isn't a comparison. So yes, while the high-end PC can definitely do 1080p 60, that doesn't necessarily mean you can translate that one-to-one to the console. That's why you're seeing a lot of people talking about this 1080p 60 frames per second, and that's why, for example, with Watch Dogs, when they're like, dude, the PS4 story trailer didn't look as good as what you showed us at E3 2012, well, it's because the version that they showed you was the PC version. The PS4 trailer was the PS4 version. There's going to be things cut back. Just because it's new technology does not instantly mean that it's on par with something that's more powerful to begin with. And I think that's the subconscious sort of stigma that's going through the industry today, is that new console equals new power equals 1080p 60 automatic, when it really isn't the case. Because Dave, as you said, mm-hmm. graphics technology has really surpassed what's available on the current console hardware. And that, I mean, that's very true. It just really, look at the past 6 months of games, dude.
I completely agree, but it doesn't mean that these consoles can't reach.
No. That's the
benchmark.
They can reach 1080p 60. That's not the issue here.
The developers, the consoles aren't to blame 100%.
No.
For the lack of content that's 60 frames in 1080p. A lot of that falls on the developers. Oh, I know a lot of people are boo-hooing. What? You're not blaming the consoles? No. The consoles are what they are. The developers mm-hmm. are to take responsibility for their work. If their work doesn't match the standards and they have to drop the resolution, damn, that's a problem with the developer.
And no, but see, the problem, here's the problem.
Well, it's a double-edged sword.
It is a double-edged sword.
It's not entirely on the developer, because in a perfect world, they could make whatever the hell game they want just let it run.
Yes, but here's the issue. And it's part of that, you know, it's one of the edges of the sword, the proverbial sword, is that graphics technologies and techniques are only getting more complicated. And Lord, I mean, today, Jesus, you look at any of the techniques that I just like randomly babble on about, those are very complicated techniques. And okay, yes, the hardware is what it is for the consoles. You cannot change that. That's what a console is, right? You cannot mm-hmm. change that. But here's the problem. I think what they're trying to do is cram everything that's on the quote-unquote high-end PC versions, such as you look at Battlefield 4, you even look at the recent Watch Dogs. Mm-hmm. They try to cram all of that into the same, all the techniques into the console versions, which obviously have less power. Well, we want the same particle effects and stuff. What are we going to do? We want 60 frames per second. We're going to have to drop the resolution. Something has to give, is what I'm saying. And rather than give up a few extra samples on ambient occlusion, one less bounce for indirect lighting, they drop the resolution. I would much rather have a lack. Yes, you're hearing me say this. I would much rather have them say, okay, maybe we're not going to be so aggressive with our anti-aliasing, but because we're cutting back on that, it frees up resources to let us achieve full 1080p.
You know, in all honesty, I would rather hire graphics than seamless borders.
I would much rather have resolution than bounce lighting. Let me say that. Because there's so many
ridiculous things you can do. And damn well, you can make the brand new... Okay, I'm exaggerating. You can make the damn new Watch Dogs. You can make it look like a Pixar film. Okay, you really can't. But just about. It's kind of ridiculous. On some of the ridiculously high-end PCs, have you seen some of the videos of that?
Yes, I've played Crysis.
Shank will be shooting.
Yeah, I've played Crysis 3. Exactly. Crysis 3. It's ridiculous. And they go all out. They're just like, hey, what's the top-end computer on the market? Okay, let's build a game for twice that. That's what they do. That's how they build those games. And you know what? That's fine and dandy, but... The fact is if you're making a release for multiple consoles, for multiple platforms, you should have a standard that plays at the top performance across all platforms, and then, on top of that, you know, don't advertise it, but say, hey, these platforms have extended options because they can reach that level. I do find it wrong to say, hey, this is releasing across all the platforms. Here's it running on super high mega ridiculousness on the PC. It will never come close on these two consoles. That's false advertising. What they should have done...
Is it false, though? Because it's absolutely false. It's kind of true, though.
It's not.
It's just misleading.
It is very misleading, and it's misleading enough for it to be false advertising. what they're advertising isn't what they can pull off across all the platforms that they're selling it.
Right, well, but that go ahead, Brian.
I would say most people won't realize that what they're seeing in the trailers is not what they're playing on their consoles. I mean, most people are not paying attention to that. So they're not, I mean, maybe technically it's misleading. Maybe you could even stretch it into is false advertising, but the average consumer isn't going to notice that or care. So, I mean, that's how they get away with it, because nobody cares. Nobody complains.
But then why was there all this hullabaloo over the Watch Dogs PS4 trailer? Because the PS4 trailer looked like crap? Yes, but that's you said, you know, the average consumer is not going to notice it. They noticed it.
It was noticeable.
They noticed that the PS4 trailer looked, you know, worse than what was shown at E3 2012.
Well, was it the average consumer, or was it, I mean, was it somebody like you who happens to have a voice and kind of gets it out there and then IGN picks it up, you know? I mean,
I don't know, because I saw it a lot of YouTube comments. I don't know. It's probably a chicken and egg issue with that, honestly.
Sure.
But I don't know, man. I would much rather have them pull back on some of the hardcore graphics techniques for these machines. If that means achieving 1080p, give me 1080p, give me fewer samples on ambient occlusion. I will take the higher resolution over more accurate ambient occlusion any day, because that just means there's more pixels. I'm sorry. I don't know how else to put it. More pixels is good.
Yeah. Final words, guys. We got to move on from this one. Shank, is that what you have to say?
That's all I had.
Okay. Brian, what you got?
Yeah, Shank mentioned the chicken and the egg, and now I'm really hungry.
Okay. Last thing I want to say is I do feel that it is deception, in whatever degree you may so choose to put it. I do feel it's deception to run it ridiculously over what it can be on other consoles. They should promote their game on the maximum it can be on their minimum console.
Sure.
That's what they should promote as the baseline. Then they should go forward and say, oh yeah, by the way, on PCs, you have all these extra options to make it look ridiculous.
They should do that. Unfortunately, if Call of Duty comes out and does that, Battlefield is going to say, haha, look how crappy that looks. Look at ours. So,
but that's good.
That just Call of Duty is like the Justin Bieber of video games.
Okay, well.
So it's always going to look like crap no matter what.
That's true. I'm just saying that unless there's like a law that says you have to, you know, show your crappiest platform, I mean, people are just going to take advantage of it. So, you know, it's not a perfect system, unfortunately.
It's not. It isn't. And it's all a part of advertising. Unfortunately, it gets caught. Anyway, enough of this. Brian, please show us what you got.
Yeah, so let's talk about some video game sales. We have some numbers here through May 3rd. They're always a couple weeks behind. And these are global sales, and these only take into account physical copies. So stuff you're downloading on the Xbox Live Store or PSN do not count. So number 10, the number 10 selling game of that week was Infamous Second Son on the PS4. Number 9, Grand Theft Auto V on the PS3. That one's still hanging in there. Pokemon XY 3DS is number 8.
Crap.
And then... Then number 7 is Titanfall on the Xbox 360, followed by behind number 6, Titanfall Xbox One. And then number 5, Minecraft on the Xbox 360. That game has sold 37 trillion copies.
I believe it. Good Lord, how does that keep selling?
I have no idea. It's
like, from someone who used to be on a Minecraft podcast, how does that keep selling?
It's an amazing story. I have no idea.
That game is more anti-Shank than Dark Souls 2 is. Anyway, keep going.
All right. Speaking of anti-Shank, number 4, The Amazing Spider-Man, number 2.
What?
What? What the hell is that?
That is a game, yes.
The Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Wait. Hold on. That means 62,000 people went out and actually bought this game for their PlayStation 4.
What the hell? Every time I think of a game built off a movie, I'm thinking of those really cheap Game Boy Color games.
Yes.
Like, that's what I see when I see The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Really?
Yeah, I didn't even know there was a 1, so I go figure.
62,000 people bought this.
Why is there PS4? I don't know how many sold on Xbox One and the other consoles as well. So
why are they making a video game of a movie that's been out for years?
Well, there's a new Spider-Man 2 that just came out too.
What?
Yeah, I don't plan on seeing it because I've heard it's bad too. Apparently, the game and the movie go hand in hand in their crappiness. But yeah, there's a new Spider-Man movie out there. Sorry to break.
Tobey Maguire still gets work.
He's like 72 years old, dude.
He is. Oh my god. All right.
Well, on a related note, this came out the same week as Halo 4, Dave. So.
Oh. Okay.
No.
That explains it.
Two games you've learned of this week. Number three, another game we've all been itching to play, Yokai Watch.
What? What the hell?
Yes.
The hell's that?
I don't know either.
What is a 3DS, Dave?
It's as I said before, a Nintendo's a type of massage. A thirdis is a special massage oil.
Ooh.
Yes. It's made out of ground up Asian children, and it's really good on the aching muscles.
Okay.
Number two. We don't know what this Nintendo thirdis thing is, but they have the top three spots in our list this week. It's Yokai Watch number 3, Kirby Triple Deluxe number 2.
Hold up. I actually bought this game.
Kirby?
Kirby Triple Deluxe. I bought it.
How is it?
Ballin'.
Yeah?
Okay, it's straight up Kirby from the Wii. Kirby Return to Dreamland. It is a Kirby game at heart. It doesn't pull off any of this stupid, oh, he's made out of yarn, watch out! No, it's none of that crap. It's actually Kirby as it's meant to be Kirby. Which is nice. Except it also has, inside of it, it has Super Smash Bros. Melee.
Kirby?
Yeah, it's Triple Deluxe. It's 3 games. It has the Kirby game.
Oh.
Then it has Super Smash Bros. Melee, except you can only pick Kirby.
Oh.
Not even kidding. It has a Kirby fighting game in it. The third game is where you have Dondongo. Dondongo. That's from Legend of Zelda. King Dedede. Not even kidding. He's a giant evil penguin. He carries a huge mallet. He's awesome. Anyway. You play a beat game where you have to keep rhythm as you bounce him across the screen on giant bongos.
Parappa the Rappa with bongos.
Kirby Triple Deluxe has only one game worth playing, and that's the Kirby one in it. The other ones are just like, hey, neat, I spent money on this. Yay!
So this package is like the definition of a Shank game, right?
So okay. What this is the orange box for Kirby.
It is the orange box for Kirby, basically. And by the way, that Kirby game is ballin', because you have multiple layers. Like, you have, like, tracks on a mix table where... You have the middle track as you walk down it from one side of the screen to the other, but you see stuff on a later track. You have to find a star to shoot yourself over to one of the back tracks, or even shoot yourself forward to one of the front ones. And there's even points in the game where enemies on different tracks will shoot at you to try to kill you, to knock you off the track. It's crazy.
Wow.
It's actually, if you're a Kirby fan, and I'm a Kirby fan, I used to play Kirby all the time. The chat room's asking, did I play Kirby Pinball? I did. I played even the Kirby Pinball games. This game's it keeps with the spirit of Kirby and does it justice.
Awesome. Good to hear. I haven't played a Kirby game in a while, but sounds fun. All right, a game I haven't played, though, is the top-selling game of the week, Mario Golf World Tour on the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
It's an awesome game. I'm playing a lot. It's very cool.
I'm not at all surprised that that's number one. Like, I'm not at all surprised.
I'm a little surprised it didn't sell more, but...
When this game, it's a spiritual successor of course, Mario Golf. Mario Golf was one of the first games that was the brainchild of, actually, there was a U.S. tour that Mario Golf was built off of that Nintendo did. The leader of Nintendo, Iwata, we've talked about him before, when he worked at HAL Labs, this was one of the first games he helped design. So the golf games under Nintendo have always held a special spot in Nintendo's eye. In fact, the Mario Golf World Tour that just released, have a few of the golf courses are re-envisionings of the original golf courses that Nintendo released on their original golfing games.
Nice. I played them back in the day. I just really don't remember them. I remember liking them, but I can't remember what they were like, so... I don't know. Doesn't mean anything to people.
I had Mario Golf on the Virtual Boy. Did you know what those were? It looked like goggles that you put on.
Oh, right.
Did a 3D landscape. But the 3D landscape was drawn in laser pointers that burned out your retinas.
Yikes.
I'm a Nintendo fanboy.
That's good. That's good. One of these days we'll learn what a Nintendo is, I'm sure.
Yeah, I agree.
It is. It's a type of massage.
Yes. But anyway, based on these numbers, I kind of got to looking at them a little deeper, and I actually did some work today. I did some math, and as Shank said, it's kind of scary. But I found some interesting numbers I thought I'd pull out, maybe we could talk about and see if there's anything we can take from this. Because my first thought when I looked at this was... Oh, crap. The video game industry is not doing very well. But I'm sure there's more to it than just these black and white numbers. So let's take a look here. So I looked at some of the top-selling exclusives on PS4 and Xbox One. And what I found is that 37% of Xbox One owners own Titanfall. So a third. But only 16% of PS4 owners own Infamous, which is arguably their biggest exclusive so far.
Wait, hold on. So these numbers, are they based off of these charts? Because you said these charts are only physical copies, right?
That's correct, yes.
So the 37% is just of physical copies, right?
Right.
Okay, so it's not like – okay.
Yeah, they either don't have a way to track this or they're just not tracking the digital downloads yet. And that was one of my questions as we got going here was, is this identifying a trend that we're switching more to digital? But I've seen some polls lately that say like 75% of people still prefer – physical copies, so mm-hmm. I don't know if that's it or not. As a side note, since we're talking about 3DS, 24% of 3DS owners own Pokemon XY. So
ballin'.
So Infamous owners not really supporting their exclusive titles there. It's what I thought was interesting. However, digging a little deeper, PS4 owners own on average 2.32 games. Xbox One owners own 2.93 games. And again, 3DS, just to throw it out there for some color, they own 3.01 games.
I can't imagine.
These are physical
like copies again. Yes.
Okay.
And that's where it gets tricky
That happens, because I would love to meet a DS owner that has only three games.
Right.
Because like I have a pack that has like full of games.
Right.
I have a theory, Brian.
Let's hear it.
Both explaining the 37% physical copies and the 16% physical copies for Titanfall and Infamous, respectively. I think it's safe to say that the PS4 has more indie titles, especially if you look at their PS Plus offerings. Come on. There's a lot of indie games you can get on that, especially for free if you have a PS Plus membership. Mm-hmm. So yeah, PS. For right now doesn't have many first party titles, but if you look at the rest of the titles available, they have a lot. There's a lot of titles there. Conversely, the Xbox One doesn't have too many indie titles currently right now, and since those titles are pretty much digital only, I bet you the reason why it looks like, the PS4 attach rate 2.32 for physical copies versus 2.93 for the Xbox One, I bet it's because a lot of those PS4 owners have more digital titles by way of PS Plus than their Xbox One counterparts.
Sure.
So I think that's why it might be a little bit like it you're seeing these numbers again. I mean, I don't have the digital numbers here, but that is just purely a theory.
Sure. And we have to stick to physical because that's all we know. But and what I was wondering here is, I mean, is this a sign of trouble ahead for Sony? Because, I mean, sure, they have PS Plus games that they're getting for quote-unquote free. They have cheap indie games they're buying, but they're not supporting, in this case, Sony's, you know, big-ticket exclusive title. Only 16% of the PS4 owners have bought it. So why is that happening? If the Sony console is doing so well, yet we're not buying their software, what's going on? Why is this happening? Is this a problem?
This is because, okay, so what you did for the just for me understanding here, you took that 7.6 million for the PS4 there that you're seeing in this chart,
mm-hmm.
and you divided it by this 32,000 here.
No, not the 32,000. I'm not sure where you're looking for the 32,000, but when I looked up
in the global top sellers.
Oh, that's just this week.
Right. So that's where I'm.
No,
that's,
he
I'm
did tra- all I, time.
I went. Yeah, I went total sales, which I think I wrote down somewhere here.
All time. Okay. Well, see, honestly, I think I don't know.
Infamous has sold 1.2 million. Titanfall has sold 1.6 million.
A physical.
Physical, yes.
Okay, so I think, yeah, I honestly think it looks this way because we don't have the digital story, and I think that the digital sales might be higher than we think it is.
Sure.
And that might offset the numerator in this case, because you're looking at Infamous specifically versus PS4, Infamous to PS4 sales. I think because of that, it might throw off specifically that Infamous figure. I don't know. It's and you know, conversely, you might say that the Xbox One, people are probably, they might be buying more physical copies instead of digital copies. So that might be why you're seeing a much larger 37% compared to the 16% for Infamous.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's very possible that PS Plus has kind of been training Sony people for a while now. Oh, I get games free on my console. I'm just going to download them. That's how I got started. I got used to liking my games digitally, just downloading them. And then once the PS4 came, I switched completely over to digital. So
Same
it could
here.
Be more people like me who are like, you know what? I just like doing it digital. I don't need to buy it. So it could be a console specific thing.
In all honesty, that would be my reasoning from seeing this. My first thought wouldn't be that these aren't selling, because they obviously are. I mean, you don't. There are games that sell only 16% per the 100% of consoles that release, and you don't hear anything about them because they don't sell enough to warrant, you know, lifting a finger. Where Infamous, you see it everywhere. They're pushing this constantly because it is one of their big sellers. It tells me that this is selling well. But like we've said, 24% of 3DS owners own Pokemon X and Y. Now, I know there was a big push recently for a digital version of Pokemon X and Y to be sold with consoles, so I'm not considering that. But I know that a lot of people went out and bought up Pokemon X and Y physical copies. I mean, that was the big thing this last year. I think that if we compare a good game, we should say that it needs to sell about, you know, 24%. Pokemon X and Y was a success. So I'd say about 24% physical copies. Why is the Xbox One's Titanfall nearly 40% of every Xbox One has a physical edition of Titanfall? That is what surprises me most of all. Not seeing Infamous at such a low physical, but seeing Titanfall at such a high physical. What's stopping people from wanting to download Titanfall digitally instead of purchasing it in a physical copy?
From experience, I can tell you the download times. Just purely because of the download times for me on my Xbox One versus my PlayStation 4. Mind you, I have a pretty speedy internet connection here at my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the source is the same. They're both plugged into the same exact internet. But I know that downloading games, you know, digital games on my Xbox One takes a lot, seriously, a lot longer than it does on my PS4. And I think maybe, and this is, again, this is just me theorizing, I think some of it might be, oh man, do I really want to wait, you know, an hour and a half to get this game, instead of I can just go to GameStop and pick it up? Because that's what I did. I didn't want to download Titanfall, so I just went out and bought a physical copy because I didn't feel like waiting an hour and a half.
And in the same vein, weren't there some server issues on the launch day that maybe swayed people like, all right, well, I can't download it, I'm just going to go buy it? Did that happen? Am I remembering that correctly?
No, there definitely were server issues, actually both on Xbox One and the PC for that, which was horrible. But that may have swayed it. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't know. I think this is only part of the story. I feel like, you know, I don't even know if they're available, honestly. But
they don't distribute digital numbers. I don't know why, but I think you're right. I'm assuming this is where you're going. That's a huge part of the story that we're not getting. So
right. So I think we're seeing only some of it, because in all honesty, I would not have a doubt at all if the Infamous and Titanfall numbers, you know, digital plus physical, were mm-hmm. pretty much the same.
Sure. Let me throw out just two more stats here for you. I know we got to move on. Dave, you mentioned, you know, 24%. That's probably a good measure of success. Mm-hmm. And I was with you until I looked back at my numbers here, and I looked up earlier today. The two top selling exclusives for the PS3 and the Xbox 360.
I actually have something to say on this as well. Go ahead, though.
All right. Well, 10.9 million copies of Gran Turismo 5, again, physical, have been sold to PS3 owners. That's 13.3% of PS3 owners own GT5. And Halo 3, 11.9 million. That's a 14.8% of 360 owners own that game as well. So, like you said, I would have thought, yeah, 25%, that's a great number for sales. But two of the top selling exclusives mm-hmm. are not really anywhere close to that number. So it's interesting.
PS3, Gran Turismo 5... I know definitively that I actually worked in a game store for when I was in going to, through college. I was a manager at a Play and Trade. So I saw what went out of the store. I can tell you definitively that any game where it's either a sports game or a racing game or anything like that, it's not going to sell nearly as much as your RPGs, your shoot 'em ups, your hack and slashes. I think 13% on Gran Turismo 5 is a success.
Sure, because it's the type of game it is. Yeah.
Right. Now, saying that, let's look to Halo 3. Now, that is one of those games. It's a shoot 'em up. It is one of those action RPG games.
Dude, it's a flagship of Xbox.
It wasn't.
Halo, no, but I'm 3, saying that the franchise Halo, like that name.
Halo, you know? 3's release was botched.
I don't remember that.
Halo 3's release was botched. A large number, in fact, a humongous number of Halo 3 release discs were of low quality, and we actually took them in for returns to be returned to the manufacturer. I know a large number of Halo 3 is skewed simply because the discs were bad. On top of that, Halo 3 kind of sucked. But I know that definitively, because I had to do it, I worked during the release of Halo 3. And I know that we had a ton of people. I returned more Halo 3 games than I sold any other game, probably. Okay, that may be an exaggeration as well. But still, all the time, I got returns on Halo 3s because the discs were bad. And no other reason. I don't know what the numbers show, if this is of people who could, you know, still own it, or this is just purchase numbers, not including returns. But I know that that was botched. And I know that that impacted sales because the discs wouldn't play.
Yeah, that would be a huge part of it. Just like we were saying, if you couldn't download Titanfall, maybe they went out and bought a physical copy. So it would, launch issues exactly. Definitely affect sales like yeah, that, for
it,
sure.
I know from personal experience that was a launch issue for Halo 3. Again, I don't know about Halo 4 and what it did because I only found out about it tonight.
So, it did 9.1 million. So
okay, so not bad. Not bad at all.
Not bad.
Hmm.
But anyway, that's all I had.
All right, is there anything else we want to say on these numbers? Shank?
No, I
good for
no.
Tonight? I'm good. All right. Let's get into the big question for tonight. This is something that I looked up personally, and then I saw again on a video podcast.
You got it from Polygon.
We found it on multiple sites. We found this on Polygon. We found this on Kotaku. We found this on Jimquisition, which I just want to come out and say is one of the two people who report on the industry that I actually watch off of YouTube religiously, is Jimquisition and Shank the Tank.
Yep.
Or Shank Spiel. Those are my two people. Those are my two go-tos. If you haven't watched Shank Spiel, you should, because I usually comment on every episode he puts out. What Shank's showing right now on the screen.
People still don't know that you troll on me.
I know. I don't get why people, like, who's that David Adams guy? No, come on, guys. Jesus, it's me. Shank's actually showing this chart.
Oh my god, it's not.
And people may not know about this chart. I mean, it's kind of freaking huge. It's kind of ridiculous. This chart that we're showing, and I'm sorry for people watching the listening to the podcast, but the chart that we're talking about is the release for Watch Dogs. That's right. There was a special release for Watch Dogs. Five different releases for Watch Dogs, and depending on where you get it, depending on what type of edition you purchase, depending on who you pre-order from, if you pre-order, you're getting a bunch of different things. And it's now to the point where it's gotten out of hand. Now, I had to do this because I am getting Watch Dogs. I got to the point where I got sick of looking it up and was like, okay, I'm getting this off of Steam, and I'm going to just shut up and be happy about it.
You and me both.
Because, honestly, I've had enough of this. I'm getting it off of Steam. That's where I get my games. If that's a problem with these people, then they need to that's me as a consumer. That's where I'm happy. So, very simply, this is out of hand. This is sickening to see how many different ways you can purchase this game, all the different DLC that you can get at launch, not get at launch, if you shake this person's hand or put money in this person's pocket. It's sickening, to say the least. Because no one version of this game is near to even be called complete. So I'm going to open up the floor on not on this particular game. We know that Watch Dogs is doing this, but Watch Dogs isn't the first to do this, nor will it be the last. So the question I have for my co-hosts is special editions, DLC, pre-order bonuses, what's our opinion on all of this?
Shank, do you want to wait till the end? Because I know you're ready to explode here.
I will cordially wait to the end.
All right. Yeah. So I watched the Jimquisition today as well, and so I'm probably going to echo a lot of the things that he said. But I like the idea of a special edition. In that video, he made a point about how can there be a collector's edition if the game hasn't even been out yet? There's no franchise that people know anything about it yet. I mean, how can you have a collector's edition? A special edition, sure, where you pay an extra $10 and you get special stuff. But to have multiple special editions where if I buy it at Walmart, I get this. If I buy it at GameStop, I get this. Steam, I get this. I hate that. That's ridiculous because how special is it if it's only one piece of the pie where no matter wherever you buy it, you're getting something different? I guess that makes it special, but that's stupid. I think this is a terrible idea. and it's got to stop. It's getting out of control. So I don't like it at all. It makes me frustrated as a consumer because I don't know which one to get.
Oh, absolutely. I felt frustrated when looking through this.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago I was researching. I can't remember what game it was now. Trying to research which version do I want. Where do I buy it? Maybe it was I don't know. Trying to figure out where to buy it. And each of them has something kind of cool that I'd like to have. But unfortunately, you can only get this version here and maybe pay $10 in 6 months to buy the content you missed out on. So it's ridiculous. I hate it. So yeah, that's it.
Shank, unload.
I am a consumer. What this means is that I have something called spending power. Spending power is all important if you are a producer of something, not just for the, you know, the video game industry, but just, you know, business at large, as in like in the world of commerce and free market capitalism. So spending power is important. If you divide your consumers, that is, divide the spending power pool, what you are serving to do, you're only doing is diluting that potential of all that spending power from your consumers and making them make a choice. And it's not like you're giving them like a, hey, you know, these are two equal choices. No. These are choices. Neither of them are complete. What do you do? Well, you guys have the spending power. We're going to screw you guys over. As a consumer, I find it quite pitiful. I really find it quite pitiful. It's dividing your consumer base is never a good thing. If I pay $60 for a game, I expect it to be complete. Period. Just that's it. There's no counter argument to that. If I pay $60 for a game, I expect a complete experience, period. That's it. If I want to get a collector's edition, and I agree with Mr. Jim Sterling because he is, well, now that Adam Susser is gone, he's the only person I respect in the industry. If you want a collector's edition, why am I collecting it? Where is my trust in this IP? Where is, quite frankly, where is your reputation to back your collector's edition for? Forgive me, but a collector's edition implies that there is something important to collect.
Yeah.
It implies that you have something worthwhile to collect. Now, am I saying that Watch Dogs is going to be a terrible game? Not at all. It could be an amazing game. I am sincerely looking forward to playing it. I take issue with the fact that Ubisoft has the cheek and the gall to assume that we consumers are so narrow-minded and stupid that we're just so drawn to this insipid reality of trying to order a collector's edition of a game that isn't even an established IP. On top of that, giving us fragmented experiences across platforms, across regions, across consumer bases, across income levels. What if I don't have $150? What if I only have $60 that I can spend? Well, guess what? You can't get the complete edition of your experience. I'm sorry. I'm the consumer. It is entirely within my right to get a complete product that I pay you money for, to deliver on. This is how a transaction works. You give me a promise of a game, a title that you've been building up since 2012. You have shown me what this game can do. You better give me my $60 worth. You do not artificially fragment off chunks of the game. Hold them for ransom for another $60 for a $150 edition, just so you can make more money off of me, just for having the gall to ask you for a complete experience. That's not how this industry should work. The fact that it does work so freely and with just wild abandon from these large publishers such as Ubisoft, such as EA, that genuinely disgusts me. This is not acceptable. You should not do this, okay? Ubisoft, EA, you guys are in the wrong. We are consumers. We have the ones with the power. We're going to let you know that it's wrong. And unfortunately, it's not going to make a difference. Which is why there are very certain few publishers left, like ZeniMax Media. The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. I bought the collector's edition. Guess why? Well, I love the Elder Scrolls series. That is, I love the established franchise. I have trust in them. I have faith in them that the collector's edition is not going to be an extra gameplay that's held for ransom, because guess what? It wasn't. That $150 got me the complete game. I could have paid $60 and received the complete game. I paid that extra money to get an art book, which was really, quite frankly, beautiful, and a statue, a collector statue. Did I receive any additional bundled DLC? Did I get any additional outfits? Any cool little guns that were in the game that were stripped and held at ransom just so you could charge me more? No, I got a complete experience.
There were guns in Skyrim? I totally missed that.
If we consumers are being treated like this, this can't stand. I'm sorry.
Shank, I have a question for you, and totally serious. Which is the more egregious thing to do? What Ubisoft is doing here, where they're segmenting off their gameplay experiences, charging ridiculous amounts of money for the entire package, or what was it Bethesda with Wolfenstein, where they sell $100 collector's edition that doesn't even include the game? Which one is worse? I'm really quite interested to know.
I'm not familiar with the Wolfenstein collector's edition, to be honest with you.
Dave, have you heard about that?
Yeah, first off, that's a collector's thing. That's like the thing that they just recently did for the Elder Scrolls, where they sold the Elder Scrolls lore books completely separate from any game. That's fine. That's just a bunch of fluff. That doesn't touch the game at all. The problem here is, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but the problem here is the contents of the game are different depending on where you purchase it. And how much money you have to pay.
It's a fragmented experience. That's what it is. It's a fragmented experience, and you're seeing this more and more.
Now, the big thing when it comes to this game, you can get the most full edition if you purchase, I'm looking at the chart, not including physical items included with the game, you get the most complete edition of this game if you purchase the limited edition on PlayStation with a season pass.
I'm going to rant about season passes.
That's ridiculous. So they're getting their money up front, but we'll get on that in a minute. There's no edition of this game that you can walk up and purchase day one and have the game. There is none. The only way is for you to mix and match with the season pass to fill in the gaps. And even doing that, you're purchasing the season pass. It's probably going to overlap a good few times depending on which edition you pay for. You tell me that isn't ridiculous.
No, it's... I'm going to go back to my car analogy, and this is somewhat tied to my Shank spiel from 2 weeks ago. It's normal, get used to it. I talk about... If you go and buy a car, okay? And a dealer says, okay, dude, I want a BMW M3. Okay, cool, but if you get the BMW M3 limited edition, you get 3 out of the 4 wheels. Well, what if I want just a regular M3? Okay, well, then you get the 2 out of the 4 wheels, but then if you get, you know, this extra performance pack, we'll give you the other 2 wheels too. No, that's not a usable product. I'm sorry. Paying you money. I expect a complete, functioning, usable, whole product, not a fragmented one, not ones that you've artificially ransomed and held at some premium. Because I have the cheek to ask for a complete product for my $60. No, I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way.
The fact of the matter is, I wouldn't be so upset if it was the game in a whole and then a bunch of DLC slapped onto it that you could purchase each one individually, hey, it's not a problem. You want this one? It's all ad hoc for whichever one you want. It's all a la carte. I would not be mad at that at all. But the way this was going to release day one, as it's shown of what they've announced, of what they've talked about already, it's a mix and match depending on what's included immediately.
Once again, pointing to the chart, if you look at this, there's no single complete experience of this game that you can purchase.
It's sickening. Now, I get that the T-Bone DLC, the Conspiracy Mode Digital Trip DLC, that's DLC. It's even touted as DLC. These other ones are touted as packs. They're DLCs. But they're being treated as if they are included in the game, as if they're part of the game.
Remember, packs and DLC are different. Packs is something that's already done. It's built. Mm-hmm. Okay?
It's behind a lock and key. Yes. Until you pay them a certain amount of money to get it.
But the DLC is basically saying, you know, we're still working on it, but it'll be ready, and once it's done, you'll get it because you paid this. That's different from a pack. I think that's important to distinguish.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly true. Now, that aside, what's y'all's opinion on the physical included fluff?
By that, do you mean like the books and stuff?
The books, in fact,
the vanity stuff.
The basically. European, Asian, Australian, Middle East markets, they're getting the ability to have a soundtrack included with the game, a iconic cap and a face mask. There you have other markets like North America is receiving, not receiving the cap, but they'll receive the face mask. Then you have markets like Europe and Middle East who are receiving augmented reality cards, but they're not receiving the vigilante mask and they're not receiving the cap. How do we feel about this?
Brian?
I don't really care. I don't care. I wouldn't use any of the stuff they're giving. I'd throw it all in a drawer or I'd sell it on eBay. I don't understand, like, I don't know why they need to break them up country by country, region by region. It doesn't make any sense other than maybe it has something to do with production. I don't know. But it seems kind of dumb. Just give us all a stupid little Aiden hat and we'll all be happy. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
I think, you know, the physical editions, like you see, you know, his cap, his scarf, his, like, the pins and buttons you see in the actual statue. I don't care if that's extra money because guess what? That's not part of the core, complete, whole experience of the game itself. Is the soundtrack, okay, well, if I don't have that soundtrack, is the game still going to be complete? Yeah, of course it is. If I don't have the statue, is a standalone game complete? Yeah, of course it is. So these physical vanity items, I mean, I like soundtracks and, you know, art books as much as, you know, another collector's edition gamer would like. But am I upset that they charge extra money for them? No, I of course not. I'm not, because they're not what make the core experience of the standalone game. Ransoming play packs, however, I take issue with that, but these physical items, not really.
What happened to the days of the games where everything was in the game and you had to actually do something within the game to unlock it?
Yeah, they have that today, actually.
Really?
Yeah, you just have to pay $100.
Yeah, I'm not talking about paying real-world money, because you shouldn't win the game with your pocketbook.
Unfortunately, that's what it is today. And let's be clear, not every publisher does this.
In Mario Golf, I unlocked a golf course the other day for free.
Very few publishers don't do this.
Yeah, there's not many left.
Very few, especially, you know, top 10 publishers, the AAA games. I can't think of anyone who doesn't do this with at least one of their games on the market right now, including Nintendo.
I honestly, I think it's a combination of a few elements. Number one, developing a AAA title today is damn expensive. That is the unfortunate reality of the situation. That's just what it is. It's very expensive to create a AAA title today, which is why you're seeing a lot of indie developers going to Kickstarter, getting crowdfunding. I mean, Kingdom Come Deliverance, cough. Go support that game. And this is one of the way that they might be able to recoup some of their costs. Honestly, I mean, that's I hate saying it, but I honestly think that you can't think that that's not part of their strategy today.
Oh, it absolutely is.
Looking at the production cost and the marketing cost, because remember, those are two separate, development and marketing. The marketing is usually as much as the development, actually. You end up with a giant chunk of change that you need to pay back that loan, man. How do you do it? You make crazy additions like this at different price points, at different regions, for different platforms. And boom, you're seeing $100 here, $100 there, $150 for this, $80 for that.
And they're going to get people buying multiple versions of it too, because they want all this crap. So I mean, that's probably part of the goal too,
no,
get people to buy it more than
I
once.
I refuse.
It's true.
I'm only ever purchasing a game once. Sorry. I can name on one hand how many times I've purchased games multiple times, and out of the majority of those, they're remakes of Pokemon games.
Wow.
Okay? So... I refuse to purchase a game more than once on more than one console. That's ridiculous. It's not reasonable to expect a consumer who sees games at $60 and already has to price pinch to expect them to pay $80, $100, $150. I get it that there may need to be a collector's edition or an exclusive edition that has all these extra physical perks. That's nice and dandy. But at the end of the day, the average consumer is who's going to pay off your AAA debt. The average consumer wants the game. They want to pay for it one time, sit down, and enjoy the hell out of it without getting nagged like you were releasing a game from King.com.
More importantly, I think they want a complete game for the $60 that they already pay.
We already don't want to pay $60.
It's true. Well, all right. Now you know our sentiments, chat room and listeners.
Oh, anyway. All right, is there anything left to say on this? I do want to say that, yes, I did purchase this game.
I did too, but guess what? I got the just standalone edition.
I got the standalone edition on Steam, and you know what? If that ain't good enough, that's the game that they're providing me. So if that's a bad game at that edition, that's the game I'm going to be playing and reviewing in my own right.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I'm going to steal it from Shank on Steam Share.
Yeah, it's Brian's going to steal it.
Unfortunately, it links to Uplay. You won't be able to.
No, he can't. No. You can do it because I purchased it through Steam, not through Uplay.
Well, I purchased it through Steam as well.
Right, but it doesn't matter because if you purchase it directly from Uplay, Steam will not recognize it as a, like, under the Steam library. But if you purchase this through Steam, yes, even though the EXE will link to that Uplay and open up the Uplay client, because you purchased it through Steam, it will be available and visible through Steam Share. And I've done this before because Brian can see my Splinter Cell Blacklist, which is also Ubisoft.
Mm-hmm.
And he can get that. But my
I tried to share my friend's Child of Light and I couldn't get it.
He probably got it from Uplay.
He got it from Steam.
Well, that's just weird.
Yep. He also can't see my Assassin's Creed Black Flag, and I got
it
on Steam.
I can't see Splinter Cell, Shank. I could. It's not there anymore.
You can't see Splinter Cell?
Mm-mm.
No way.
Nope. It's not there anymore. It was. I guess I'll have to buy it. Jeez.
No. Just wait until next Tuesday, and if you can't see it, then...
Well, yeah. I would.
Yeah.
All right. All right, guys.
Anyway.
Any other things to say on this matter before we move on?
All good, man.
All right. I hereby call to the close the meeting of News of the Week. It's time to move on to Hero Play. Looks like this week, Shank, you've been playing Borderlands, huh?
I have been playing Borderlands. And I'm actually, since I'm sharing my stream, I can actually show you exactly what I've done to the settings.
Oh my god.
No, it's not that bad. By the way, chat room, if you don't have this tool and you have an NVIDIA card, please get it. It's called NVIDIA Inspector. Latest version is 1.9.72. Just get it. So what have I been doing in Borderlands? Some of you may know that I have a shiny new toy that's a giant hunk of silicon that's just in my computer right now. And basically what I wanted to do is I wanted to see how much I could push the game. I really wanted to see what can I get away with on this card. So really, more than anything, it was typical Shank technical exercise. Yeah, you guys aren't surprised. So what I did was I looked up some tweaks, which I'm going to show you guys right here on the chat room. And on podcast, if you're listening, you have Borderlands or wondering how you can tweak it. Please just Google GeForce, you know, NVIDIA's GeForce. Just Google GeForce Borderlands 2 Tweak Guide, and it should be one of the first links that pop up. And you're going to get this this page up here. So what did I do here? Basically, I changed a couple things. I got rid of the anti-aliasing within the game, and I added what's called SGSSAA, otherwise known as Sparse Grid Super Sampling Anti-Aliasing. Kind of expensive. It's exactly what I did to Dark Souls last week. But my God, does it look just gorgeous. So if you're on the live stream on YouTube, watching this on YouTube later, please take note of the screen right now. Be sure to copy these settings into your game, and you can have it look quite pretty, actually. So what I did was I did that. I changed some texture streaming tweaks in the INI file so they no longer slowly fade. They're just there. I bumped up my shatter resolution to 4096, which is basically, it is 4K shatter resolution, so it's really pretty. It's crazy. I did all these tweaks, especially with this anti-aliasing right here that you can see on my stream. This is a very, very resource-intensive method, and it really destroys your hardware. And yeah, I was still getting 60 frames per second, which was, you know, it wasn't my target, but I was just kind of a little bit taken aback. So I'm this is just one of the few games that I'm testing and just poking and prodding my card with. I'm just basically trying to find its limits. This game wasn't giving it to me, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it made the game very pretty. I've also restarted my character in here, and it's very fun. So please, if you're interested in doing the tweaks again, look at my screen here. If you missed it, you know, rewind the video a little bit, pause it, copy these settings into your own NVIDIA Inspector. And have fun in Borderlands 2. And if you do this, it'll be very, very, very pretty. That's all I did. It was typical Shank technical exercise.
Yeah, that sounded pretty. Or the screenshots you were sending out were pretty amazing. I'm not a huge fan of that game, but you sure made it look really, really nice. So I would kind of like to come over and watch it. But yeah,
dude, you should.
Okay, I'll be there. I'll bring some McDonald's.
Dude, totally.
So you got it to 4K. That's beautiful.
No. I got the shadows to 4K, not the game to 4K.
Yeah, I know. But
well, that's not true. That's not true because SGSSAA, what it does is at 4X, it's basically rendering every single pixel four times and then doing a sampling, getting an averaging of those four. So I guess it was 4K if you look at it from that perspective. So yay? Question? I don't know.
So pretty at the end of the day.
Yes, at the end of the day, pretty. Happy Shank.
Okay. Brian, did you get anything crazy this week that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I haven't gotten too far into it yet, but I just picked up Fire Emblem Awakening on the 3DS, which I know you've played, right?
That's one that
you recommended to me, and
I
so
not.
Far. You did not recommend it to me?
No, I did not.
Oh. Well, that is something I made up in my own mind then. So I have been playing this game that I picked out all on my own. I swear you recommended that to me, but
I purchased it, or I got it for Christmas, but no, I did not.
Oh, you said Bravely Default, didn't you? In Zelda. Maybe not. I'm Brian. Is this Dave I'm talking to?
Yes.
All right. Well, anyway, I've been playing this great game, and it's pretty cool. It's a strategic, tactical, RPG, kind of like a Fallout Tactics kind of game. I'm not very far into it, so I can't speak on it too much, but it's awesome. It looks really good on the 3DS. Probably, I would guess, way better than Borderlands 2 on Shank's computer.
Oh, no doubt, dude. No doubt.
Yeah. Plus, it's got 3D, which we all love here. It's a lot of fun. I'll report on it more as I get through it further. It's a lot of fun. I'm having a great time.
It just looks way better than on Shank's computer. Sorry, the way you said that was hilarious. I just thought it was really funny. So, all Dave, right. How about that need for speed?
So good of you for asking. I've been playing. As I said earlier, Kirby Triple Deluxe, which has been a lot of fun. I tested out Child of Light, and I noticed that is $15 that I shouldn't have spent. I am woefully disappointed in that game.
I can't. Really? When you said you were buying it, I was like, dude, it just seems like the most counter Dave game I've ever seen.
Dude, I love RPG games a lot. I loved playing Bravely Default, but that game, it looks like the 3D version of Insane Aquarium.
Never played it.
Okay, look it up, you'll cringe. I was expecting the main character to be drawn into the game, you know, like a drawn character. It's a crappy PopCap level 3D model. If you don't know, PopCap are the people who made Bejeweled. Okay, it looks... The character models look horrible. It turned me away so quickly. I was like, I cannot believe that this game had that much hype, and it just, like, stabbed me in the back. I had so much hope for it. I really did. Well, anyway.
I don't even know if it's 3D model, dude.
That character, it has to be, because it looks like a damn character from PopCap. It's horrible.
I think I know why it looks that way to you, though. It's a rather technical explanation. Do you want me to tell you about it?
Not particularly.
Okay. It's not 3D model. Just take my word for it.
It looks horrible. It definitely doesn't look drawn like it everywhere else. That it shows her in live action when you're moving her around, it looks like a really crappy 3D model.
Well, I'll defend the game to the point that I haven't looked, I guess, that closely at her model. I haven't noticed that about her. I think the game's pretty damn beautiful.
Yeah, the pictures that Shank's pulling up, it does not look like that.
I can't see what he's pulling up. My feed's died, but I don't know. I'm obviously not as graphic savvy. Is that a thing? As Shank is, not as you either, Dave. But
I don't think it's 3D. It's a very. I mean, the way that they. Yeah, it's a technical. I'm not going to get into the technical. It's pretty. Yeah.
Dude, you need to try this game.
I have. I've played it.
Okay, it looks horrible.
I mean, I like the art style. And it's definitely it's one of those 2D 1080p games though.
That character model for the
it's
main
not
character?
It's not a character model though. It's literally somebody drew it.
No, it isn't. No, I will defend that to the end. It is not drawn.
Okay, it's okay.
Art for the main character is done differently than all the other art in the rest of the game.
It's okay. You can be wrong. It's okay.
It looked like a piece of bubble gum stuck on a piece of paper.
When people usually, when people usually discuss with me on anything, it's. I think the shadow of my magnificence extends and just, really just intimidates them so much that they actually just start saying wrong things all the time.
I just end up agreeing with you. Oh yeah, you're right.
It looks horrible. Moving on! For real. It's time to move on. time to take on the Quatois.
Right. Okay, so this question of the week. This was a fan-submitted question, actually. And it's actually a good question. I'm not going to lie. It's actually a good question because Dave was talking about emulation not too long ago on this show about PC on his laptop, I believe. And this comes from one of our fans on Twitter, Chupacabra7777. So if you're listening, yo. He was asking, with the new consoles being x86, that's x86 architecture, are we going to see more console emulation on the PC? First of all, thank you for your question. That's a pretty interesting question. Especially, you know, emulation is a kind of a thing on the PC. It really is. It's kind of got its own, like, market, as it were. I don't even know if that's the right word. But I think my answer is yes. I think we're going to see more console emulation on the PC. And I think the reason that it wasn't – I think it was – It's difficult because I honestly don't think that there's still to this day I don't think there's an actual stable standalone PS3 emulator. I don't think that's actually a thing. And part of the reason is because if you looked at the last generation of consoles, you have the Xbox 360, which is PowerPC architecture, and you have the PlayStation 3, which is Cell architecture. Both of them are a little bit, you know, the PowerPC is, I won't say easier, I'll say less difficult to emulate than Cell. Cell is just, I don't even know, like Cell just doesn't make sense, basically. It is as far from an x86 architecture as you can possibly get. So that's why emulation from that system was really doesn't really exist today. But with these new machines, both being x86, yes, they have their own sort of flavor on them. They have less overhead on either of them with their own sort of custom, whether it's OpenGL or DX11 APIs on top of them. They're stripped down, but still at the core, they're x86. Anybody who knows how to program has been taught x86 for like 30 years, basically. That's how old this x86 is, roughly 30 years. So yeah, I just think because these consoles are PCs, we're going to see more console emulation coming to the PC. Do I know when? I have no idea. Hopefully soon. That's my take on it, gentlemen.
You know, I don't have a real thorough knowledge of this kind of stuff. This is a little bit over my head. You know, I don't really know the history of console emulation, how well it's worked. You know, what other consoles you've been able to do that on. I haven't played an emulated game since I played, I think it was like Mario on my Dell back in college. You know, it's been a while since I played an emulated game. So to answer the question, I think I'll answer the question with a question. And Dave, I apologize in advance for this. But sure. Does anybody else feel the need for speed?
Get out. here's how it goes with emulation. Now, before I go into this, I want to say that there is a difference between emulation and a porting of a game.
Oh, that's, dude, yeah. Please address that. That's a huge difference.
There's a very big difference. Porting a game makes the game run within the processes on the computer. It integrates with the computer as a whole. What it does is it uses the architecture of the operating system of the computer to run the operations that run the game or whatever it is it's playing. On the other hand, emulation is a type of encapsulation. What it does is it takes the operating system, then it runs a layer on top of that, which acts as if it is the other operating system. This same thing is used with things like Ubuntu, where you can actually create multiple operating systems running off of one computer. You can emulate an entire business center, an entire group of computers, have them set up and port them out to the actual computers from building them on one console using emulation. On the same thought process, you can fake, for an example, I used to fake a PlayStation 2 on my laptop. I had to go in and with this little reader, pull the BIOS code off of my PlayStation 2, put it in so that it would run the BIOS that actually was the binary internal operating system of the system. Then it would run the game on top of the program that was running the BIOS on top of the operating system running on the computer's core BIOS. So there's a lot more overhead. There's a lot more that goes on to it. It's so much more fluff and fat surrounding a program that's run on emulation that you can't go one-to-one. You can't say, this game's releasing for the Xbox One. I'm to expect it can run on today's computer. It doesn't work like that. How it works is, yesteryear's PlayStation, I can probably emulate on today's computer. Now, as I said, that's not the same thing as porting. Porting is where they take the game and write it so it runs without the extra emulator operating systems and without the extra crap to run on your operating system, removing all that fat and fluff so that it can run on your current hardware, so that it is programmed to run on your current hardware, where an emulation system is faking the hardware. It's not actually the hardware it was programmed for. It's faking it. It's faking all of the operations to make it force the game to run.
Which, if I might just add real quick onto that, mm-hmm. that costs significantly more resources.
So ridiculously
so. The only way to successfully do that, I mean, you literally need to brute force.
It is. It is 100% brute force. And I have a really great laptop. I can use my laptop. In fact, that's how I play Final Fantasy X. I have a laptop that I have plugged up or have my emulation program in it. I pulled the BIOS off of my old broken PS2. I have it emulated on my laptop. Then I can literally put my Final Fantasy X disc in my laptop to play it. In all honesty, I'm pretty sure some nation calls that illegal, but you know what? I paid for every bit of it, and I got it running on my old laptop, but there's no way in hell I could do that with a PS3 game. There's no way in hell I could do that with a PS4 game just because of the raw power that it would require to run those games. There's no way. And on top of that, just getting to the core programming aspects of cracking that BIOS so you can figure out, hey, here's where I need to point, you know, this to this process, this to this process, to, you know, you're literally having someone rip the difference between the software and the hardware out of your systems, your old systems like a PS2, go over to a computer and fake the directions of, hey, here's where you need to go to look for your controller ports. Here's where you need to go to look for your CPU, your GPU, your all these different things that goes along with a different console. Which, by the way, a nifty little thing about emulation. Remember I said I used to work at a game store? We took in an Xbox. The guy came up to the register, traded in his old Xbox. He told us it doesn't just play Xbox games. The guy had a faked operating system. Like he had a secondary boot operating system, like a Linux kind of thing, that also ran Nintendo 64 games.
Dude, yeah, one of my
on his Xbox.
It's funny you say that. One of my friends, she just got engaged, and her fiance. Every time I go visit them, we always play Mario Party 64.
Yeah,
on his Xbox.
On his Xbox, because as I said, you take a more powerful piece of hardware. And you can take it to run the program that encapsulates the old hardware. Well, not hardware, but the software that ran on the old hardware. You take, you know, something that has something from yesteryear and you can run it on the stuff from today. But there's no way you could force emulation on what we have. Writing the software alone takes years. Let's say, hypothetically, we have the software right now to force the games of today to run on PCs without being ported over. it would take so much power to bypass all the fluff and guts of your normal operating systems to get the games to run.
So do you want me to just donate my PC now, or...
So Dale, I have a serious question this time. That sounds like a huge pain in the ass. I mean, everything you talk about, I have no idea what you're talking about, but...
It is.
With this new PlayStation Now service coming out here soon, is that something that interests you as a person who has done emulation, or is that not going to be up to the level that you're talking about here?
Well, first off, PlayStation Now is not on PC, so I have no interest in it. secondly,
okay, a service like it, then, you know,
let's say hypothetically PlayStation took all of their old PlayStation games and ported them to the PC, I'd be ecstatic. I'd buy Crash Bandicoot. I'd get all these old games from my childhood. I'd play them. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that they can't already be played. There are PlayStation 1 emulators out there that run perfect. There are PlayStation 2 emulators out there that are still iffy. To this day, still iffy. PlayStation 2 emulators. I know there's people who tout PlayStation 3 emulators.
There really isn't a stable PS3.
There's no stable PS3 emulator, I'll tell you that.
That's just, that architecture, like, makes no sense.
It doesn't.
So, I don't know. So, to Chupacabra, to answer your question, yes, you're going to see console emulators. I think it will be easier with these systems, but not anytime soon. I'm going to say
I think
four
it
five
will
years.
Be easier with similar architecture. It would be very much be easier.
Yeah.
Because, again, you are pulling it. You do have to write the program to point it where to go. And then you have to force it to recognize that it is running on the old hardware.
Yes.
That wouldn't be that hard if it already is pointed where it needs to point.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, there's your answer. Speaking of answers...
Mm-hmm.
Hey... So, I was playing some Crysis 3 today, recording some footage for Shank's Spiel, and I actually shot a deer, Dave.
Yeah? Did it make a sound like this? You'd know if you were using your tweaked audio earbuds from tweakedaudio.com.
No,
quality earbuds, free worldwide shipping, unbeatable customer service. Fixed your segue, lifetime warranty with our code off the record, all one word, you get 30% off your order. All at tweakedaudio.com.
Kicking Dave off.
I'm totally going to try to fix y'all's segues from now on. Anyway, Brian... Could you tell me real quick, do you have...
The need for speed?
For speed?
Yes, I do. And if you would like to follow me on this journey, you can follow the show on Twitter as well. Follow Totally Heroes on Twitter, at Totally Heroes. Follow Dave, the Segway Fixer, at Dienforce, D-I-E-N-F-O-R-C-E. Follow Shank, the Segway Crasher, at Shank the Tank. Follow me, the guy who just bumbles through all of them, at SilentFury007. You can email the show at QuestGamingCommunity@gmail.com. Find us on our forums, QuestGamingCommunity.com. Find us on Facebook, Facebook.com/QuestGamingNetwork. Google Plus as well, Google.com/QuestGamingNetwork. And you can also, that's all the places you can find us, actually. Never mind. Guys, anything you're working on, anything you want to share with the network about anything you're writing, working on for the community, what's going on out there?
Well.
All right. Go ahead, Jay.
Yep. This is the point of the show where I shamelessly plug my Shank spiel for this Thursday. Last week I discussed Xbox. Was there... Really weird, optimistic one. It felt awkward when I was doing it. It was just too optimistic. This one, I'm back to my old ranty self. Don't worry. It's going to be titled Resolutionary War. So just prepare your rants and hate comments, Dave.
I try. I did last week. I'd get a really good hate comment.
God, I cannot. People still don't think that. Like, people think that you're serious.
Well, that's because every comment on YouTube is serious. I even ended it in sarcasm. And people still found it to be serious. It was beautiful.
Nice. Dave, you got anything you're working on you want to share?
Well, not particularly. I know there are a few things in the work for the network as a whole, but anything I could put my thumb on to be released within the next week? No, nothing.
Sweet. I'm going to be playing some Need for Speed tonight.
Do you have the need? The Need for Speed?
No. So Shank, speaking of turkeys, tell us about
that's right, deer. Brian. Exactly. So that deer, you can check up on all the latest and greatest gaming.
That wasn't even a sentence.
Fix that one.
You gotta make a sentence at least. And then the across the way, they did.
Growing community, Dave. It all starts at questgamingnetwork.com. You can stay connected to the latest news from Xbox, PlayStation, Elder Scrolls, and Need for Speed. And if you feel like donating $10, we greatly appreciate it. This is just one of the ways that we can continue to bring you some excellent quality work.
And we promise to not improve our segues with that
$10. And we promise to completely devolve our segues. And just let us know which show you'd like to be mentioned on, and we will make sure that will happen for you. We have other shows. You can follow our other shows like SWTOR Reforged, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right before this show, actually. So they are the Spice Girls to our Kesha. We also have Elder Scrolls on
what?
which is on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. And then on Fridays, we have Classic Elder Scrolls Night, Fridays at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can find all the ways to hear our shows and contact us on our sidebar. Just look for the Follow Us section on our sidebar on our site, including Stitcher Radio on your mobile device, as well as iTunes. Feel free to check out all of our gaming videos, how-to guide, and recorded Twitch streams at youtube.com/questgamingnetwork. And you can watch for our nightly stream 7 days a week on our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/questgamingnetwork. Though, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, we're going to be starting to do some stuff on YouTube in the future.
We are looking into migrating from Twitch to YouTube full-time. So we're looking into ways of making that a reality. That would make life a lot easier for everybody. But at the moment, we're kind of stuck on Twitch.
Well, there you go.
So, we'll see.
And now to take it home. Dave, how did...
Really? You're intentionally doing this because you know I can't even... I can't even. I am 300% done. Totally Heroes is a Quest Gaming Network production. My name's Dave D'Enforce Adams. We will see you.
Speaking of segues, here's Shank.
Need for Speed.
I hate you guys.